All right, welcome along to the show for the next few hours where we talk to lots and lots of people about lots and lots of things. And one of those things we're going to be talking about later on, by the way, is drink driving. And I want to know what you think. Should we change the laws? In the UK, they're bringing in a raft of new legislation, reducing the drink driving limit down to 20 millilitres per 100 milligrams of blood. In other words, you can't drink at all, not even that one pint anymore. And they're also increasing the fines and possible jail time. They want to also include insurance as a criminal offence and not just a road traffic offence. And I asked if you agree, and I kind of suggested to somebody a while ago that we don't take drink driving seriously enough. We really don't. People still take a chance. It's not something that happens by accident. You make an intentional decision to go out and drink and drive a car. You don't do it by accident. You don't fall behind the steering wheel. It's not like, say, you know, having an accident on the road because of careless driving or, you know, a lapse of concentration or whatever it is. It's something you do intentionally. So should you be banned for 10 years? Not two, to teach you a lesson, not to do it again, because people are just not taking it seriously enough. We'll be talking about that. Also, what I'm going to talk about is child benefit. There's a suggestion in the budget. They may reduce child benefit or earners, maybe over 100,000. I don't know. They haven't put a figure on it, but I know Sinn Féin suggested that some time ago. 100,000. If you earn over that, that you don't get as much child benefit and the extra money be given to increase those for who are on a lower income. I want to know if you agree with that. But first, it's really difficult to even talk about this. And I don't know where we stand now at the moment. I mean, the Taoiseach has said that he had sought additional clinical consultations in the case of the 9-year-old boy, Harvey Morrison Sharrett, who died last week, which is the end of July there. Now, he received spinal surgery for scoliosis last December, by which point his spine had already reached a curvature of 130 degrees. Now, Simon Harris, if you go back in time, pledged in 2017 that no child will be waiting any longer than 4 months. That was his pledge. This is what politicians do all the time. They tell us things they want that we want to hear, and then they don't do them. And in the wake of Harvey's death, his parents, Gillian and Stephen, have called for Mr. Harris to resign. And let's be clear about it. You know, he was the health minister at one point as well. Gillian posted on X, he said, delays and the absolute mismanagement of scoliosis and spina bifida care mean that Harvey was left to deteriorate. The poor child, the rock star, as he's been called, was left to deteriorate to the point where he actually died. Somebody has to take responsibility. There has to be accountability. We seem to lack it. Many people have called for the resignation of Simon Harris, including Padraig Tobin, who joins me on the line, leader of AIM2. Padraig, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Padraig, this is a shocking, shocking story. And my condolences first to the family and the friends of poor Harvey, who went through an awful lot of pain in the latter years of his short life.
It is a desperately sad situation, and my deepest sympathies to the family of Harvey as well. It's probably the most heartbreaking thing that a parent can do is to bury their own child. And for a child to have such difficult circumstances and to have endured so much pain during his life and to have not had the access to life-saving surgery when he needed it, you know, makes that whole crisis all the worse for that family. And I imagine, you know, the family having to relive the trauma on a daily basis by discussions in the media and by, you know, newspaper reports, etc., must be very, very hard on the family. I have listened to some of the published social media from the family, and they have been incredibly brave and incredibly measured at a time where emotions must be, you know, running very high in the family at the moment. It's so hard to believe that we live in a society whereby at one level, the government is putting 8 billion euros away in savings every year. And on another level, hundreds of children in this country are on waiting lists for surgery in terms of scoliosis. It's an incredible situation that if you look at even now, even today, after all that's happened so far, there are 233 children on a waiting list for spinal surgery at the moment for long periods of time. 20 children for more than between 6 and 9 months. Children, you know, waiting for 4 years for surgery currently. It just is absolutely mind-boggling how on one level, the investment hasn't been put in, and on another level, we haven't had the proper management of the service to be able to make the service work properly. And if you look at Harvey's particular case, you know, here was a child who was taken off the waiting list for surgery.
And you raised that issue in the Dáil yourself, going back last year to Simon Harris directly.
That's right. So in the Dáil last September, we basically raised the fact that how could a child be taken off a surgery list and the parents not being told about it? And, you know, I questioned Simon Harris. He promised at that stage to meet with Harvey's family and to meet with the other families. But he never found the time to meet with Harvey's parents.
And I think that's
absolutely shocking.
No, and still hasn't. To be fair, and obviously I have to be reasonable and balanced in relation to this, Simon Harris said, firstly, I want to extend in a very sincere way my deepest sympathies to the family of Harvey, and I don't wish to say anything to cut across their grief. When this issue was brought to my attention during the time as Taoiseach, I remember being very concerned about making sure that proper clinical interventions and consultations were made available. And then he goes on to say, and when Harvey's case was brought to my attention, I immediately contacted the Department of Health and CHI and sought additional clinical consultations, which I believe did take place. I was always of the view that it was very important that any medical interventions were, of course, clinically or clinician-led. Do you accept that?
Yes, so... I accept that it is impossible for any minister to be completely responsible for every single thing that happens within the health service. But the problem I have in terms of the scoliosis situation, this lack of timely surgery and this difficulty in terms of people being taken off waiting lists, these weren't random actions that were unrepresentative of what was happening within that system. The whole scoliosis system has been grinding to a halt and have been a disaster for the last 10 years at this stage. And so much so that Simon Harris himself went on the Sean O'Rourke show and promised that no child in this country would wait for longer than 4 months for scoliosis operations.
That was in 2017, you know, just to point out.
But 2017.
And here we are, you know, 8 years later, and it's still happening. They're still waiting years.
And the problem is the whole of the CHI system is in complete chaos at the moment. We learned that in CHI that springs that didn't have the necessary regulation were inserted into children, that many children were forced to have hip surgery that didn't reach the thresholds for needing that actual hip surgery, and that the whole process of parents being told about this was in a very slipshod, drip-feed fashion. Which means that parents didn't know whether their children were damaged or not by this unnecessary surgery. And we know that money was actually spent in CHI that shouldn't have been spent, and that there was a poisonous atmosphere in the management of CHI. So the problem I have here is that Harvey is a victim of a completely dysfunctional system.
Well, it's incompetence,
and Minister Harris,
isn't it? It's just incompetence at this stage.
It's completely dysfunctional. And at no time in the last 10 years has any of the Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael ministers taken responsibility for it or even sought to actually fix it properly. And that's why I think that this is, you know, the loss of a child is the biggest, most devastating thing that can happen to any parent and any family. And here we have a government who were directly responsible for the ongoing, continuing dysfunction that was happening in that sector. And if we don't have some level of accountability in this country, we're never going to resolve these crises. We're going to have these conversations over and over again. And that's why I believe that Simon Harris is directly responsible for the dysfunction that has led to this crisis, and as a result, should be held to account for it. And to be honest, there are lots of other reasons why Simon Harris is not fit for office. And the National Children's Hospital is another example of that. But on this specific case, this is a...
I know what you're saying. And obviously, I'm putting on my neutral hat here and saying, you said a few minutes ago that, you know, a minister can't be responsible directly for, you know, practices that don't happen to work out or shouldn't or don't conform to what they should be. And you know, obviously they're instrumental in making sure those practices work, but they can't always be responsible when things go wrong. But the problem we have here is that Simon Harris, you know, broke this down and individually pointed out this situation back in 2017, making a promise to the people. Now, we've heard on numerous occasions, by the way, and politicians themselves, not you, but obviously, have admitted that politicians lie to get elected. But this, you know, was very specific. He said 4 months. And as I said, we're here 8 years later. And now a child has died due to that incompetence. whoever you want to blame for that incompetence, a child has died. A child has died in pain, waiting years for an operation. And that's completely unacceptable, and I agree with you. Is resignation the right thing? Is stepping down as tarnisher, or is resignation, or what? I mean, what is everybody looking for? Because obviously he's probably going to be the Taoiseach very soon. So what is everybody looking for?
So this is not a random case. This is not an outlier. This is a issue that has continued unabated for over 10 years in this country. And this is an issue in which Simon Harris has his fingerprints all over it, and that he actually made it his responsibility when he stated in public that no child would have to wait longer than 4 months. And the problem is he has allowed for that dysfunction to fester over those years without actually taking the necessary actions to fix it. And as a result, it has cost lives. It has led to a trail of destruction in families' experiences across this country. It is probably the most serious thing that any minister can be responsible for. And I have no doubt in my mind that if we don't implement some level of accountability for this, well, then there's going to be never accountability for anything.
But there doesn't seem to be accountability at all within government over the last 4 or 5 years. People say it to me all the time, there was a time, and I certainly don't want to bring up the politics of the 1980s with, you know, Charlie Haugh and Bertie Ahern and everybody else, but there was a time when corrupt politicians, when politicians who didn't do their job properly, when politicians made false promises, when politicians were caught with their hand in somebody's pocket, that even though they were all doing it, if they were caught, there was accountability. They lost their jobs. And they were aware of that. But I don't see that anymore. I see a government who is terrified to lose a minister, to have a vote of no confidence or whatever it happens to be, because it could take a government down, because they're only in by the skin of their teeth. So isn't that the problem? That they're only barely there by the skin of their teeth. They even had to borrow a few independents just to stay in there. So realistically, they're terrified to lose anybody because it takes down the numbers on them.
So in every single walk of life, other than senior levels of the public, the senior levels of the civil service and the political system, in every single walk of life, your walk of life, everybody that's listening to your show, if they continuously make mistakes or continuously do not do their job or continuously cause costs or problems, there will be a cost to them for that. Either that they will be, they won't get the necessary promotions, or they won't get the necessary wage increases, or they will lose their jobs eventually. And that level of accountability is a key catalyst in making sure the systems function properly. Because human nature is that if nothing ever happens for you never doing anything, for doing things wrong, well, then you're not going to pay attention to the job so that it goes properly. And this job is of such importance in terms of people's lives that it is more critical that there's accountability in this system. I had a senior member of the Department of Health in before me in a finance committee about a year and a half ago, and I asked him, in his experience, his 40 years experience within the Department of Health, did he know of anybody who lost their job for mistakes or for wrongdoing or for overruns and costs, etc., in his time? And he said he did not know of anybody who lost a job as a result. Take CHI, and CHI is the organization that's responsible for this. So we have learned in CHI that unauthorized springs were put into children. The threshold for hip surgery was not met for possibly hundreds of operations. That there was a toxic work culture and misuse of state funding. Now, the person who is in charge of CHI at that period of time, is the CEO, was promoted to actually run for the transition into the National Children's Hospital. So in actual fact, in this country,
they're rewarded for bad behavior.
Exactly. So rather than actually say that for running an organization which has at least five or six, you know, individually shocking situations arise within your period of time in charge of that organization, rather than actually being a significant cost, rather than being fired for that, there's actually a promotion involved in it. And the problem is all of these debates, you know, Harvey's situation is so shocking and so important But I actually feel a little bit cautious about even making any other, reference to anything else that the government has done. But I just want to say that in all the mistakes, even from the bicycle shed up to CHI, up to the National Children's Hospital, Nobody is ever held to account. Not one individual is ever held to account.
The ultimate, the most vulnerable in society, the people we're meant to protect are the young, the children and the elderly, of course, as well. And we let them down so badly that this young boy of 9 years of age, who had a curvature of 130 degrees in his spine, who went through years of pain, waited years and years to get the surgery he needed. Alas, too late. And now has passed away. And his parents, as you rightly said, Gillian and Stephen, never thought they'd have to bury their own son. And it's all due to the incompetence of a system that has completely failed. And somebody has to take responsibility for that.
A system that has been allowed to fail. A system that has... Unfortunately, we have a political class in this country, I believe, who often see themselves as passengers on the bus rather than driving the bus, who often are actually in the control of the departments that they're meant to be running themselves. The system is backwards in these terms. Until that changes, we're going to have this excruciating pain suffered by children waiting on those lists over and over again. And, in this particular situation, the family have been very careful to, wait for the results of the tests in terms of the exact cause of death in Harvey's case. But what I would like at this stage to happen, I believe that the health committee in Leinster House should be reconvened. I believe that Simon Harris should be brought before the health committee in Leinster House and ask questions in relation to his role in terms of the lack of proper management of the system, the lack of funding, the slowness of the delivery of the process. Even today, the waiting lists are getting longer in terms of scoliosis patients. I'd also like for the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, to be asked, does he have confidence in Simon Harris as well? Because my worry to a certain extent is that the summer holidays from Leinster House are going to be used as a form of defence by the political system not to have to face the hard questions in relation to this. It's far too serious for that. And I do believe that at this stage, we need to reach a watershed moment in the Irish political system. Because if we don't reach a watershed moment on the basis of the loss of life of a young boy so tragically in this situation, I don't know how we're ever going to have the confidence to be able to have a system of accountability ever for anything in the future.
Listen, thank you very much indeed, Pat O'Tobin, leader of AIM2. I appreciate you coming on the air to talk to us today. What a shocking, shocking story. And Pat is 100% right. It's hard for me, by the way, to have any kind of impartiality when it comes to talking about a situation like that, because there is no other thing or right thing to say. When you hear of a young 9-year-old who went through so much pain because of a failed system, a system that Simon Harris has to take responsibility for. That's his job. He made a promise to the people of Ireland in 2017 that no child would be waiting more than 4 months for an operation for scoliosis. That was his promise. And if you're a politician and you make promises, particularly when it comes to the seriousness of scoliosis and young children and the pain and suffering they're in, and possibly their death, which now we've seen, you can't make false promises. It's different to make a false promise in relation to giving an extra fiver to someone on the dole. That's a very different thing. We're talking about the health of children here. And false promises were made. 8 years later, we're still in the same situation. And by the way, I don't want to take away from everybody else too who has children waiting for all different types of operations for 2 and 3 years. It is ridiculous. Absolutely. This is a Western country. We're a wealthy country for the size of this country. We're able to put money by for a rainy day. We have lots of money that we can spend on all sorts of different things. And yet, the most basic things to look after the citizens of this country, particularly the most vulnerable, the young and the old, we fail miserably. Well, we don't. They do. The people we elected. And this young child, and again, condolences to Gillian and Stephen and all of their extended family and friends on the passing of young Harvey, 9 years of age. A hero and a rock star, I've been told, and a wonderful young child. And they have called for the resignation of Simon Harris, as has Pat O'Tobin. And Pat O'Tobin has also called for Simon Harris to be brought before the committee. and they should reconvene during the recess. I'm not going to take too many calls in relation to that because there's no point. And I'll tell you why there's no point. Because everybody agrees. Somebody has to be accountable. And the person in this case that has to be accountable is the person managing that department, and that was Simon Harris. So everybody agrees. Nobody's going to come on and defend Simon Harris. I don't believe they can. Anyway, we'll be talking about drink driving as well in a few minutes. Please get your text and WhatsApp in at 085-100-2255. First of all, I want to go to Elaine Mullally. Elaine, hi, how are you?
I'm very good, thanks, Niall. And yourself?
I'm grand, but that story, it breaks my heart. Absolutely breaks my heart that a young boy went through so much pain and suffering unnecessarily. You know, now we should await the autopsy to find out exactly the cause of death. And that's the family are being very measured in what they're saying at the moment. But ultimately, somebody has to be responsible. And that person has to be Simon Harris.
And the family have been brilliant in their messaging and in how they're handling themselves, because I'm not sure, as a parent, I'm just not sure how I would be at this point in time. Mm. I think it's awful. Like you said, there's not one person could come on and defend Simon Harris or the Department of Health or any other, any minister or anybody who's been in place for the last 7 years. When that promise was made, it should have been honoured. Like you said, vulnerable children.
Well, it doesn't take 8 years to honour a promise. It couldn't take 8 years to honour a promise.
No. So it actually goes to show you the exact state of politics in this country. It couldn't be more obvious.
Well. Speaking of politics in this country, before I come to our drink driving topic, which is the reason I got you on, Elaine, you should be running for presidency, Elaine, after your performance, by the way. Maybe you should tell our listeners a little bit about it, because there was Elaine Mullally, comes up on Twitter, behind a podium, telling Europe at the mega conference, which is Make Europe Great Again, telling the conference all about Ireland and how saddened you are as a mother because your own children were leaving our shores, not because they wanted to, and your fear was they would never come back. So what was the conference, and how did you end up there in the middle of all these people from Europe, rubbing shoulders with the hobnobs of Europe? How did you end up in that situation?
Well, I've been very busy, Niall. I've been building networks. I've been working hard in Ireland for the last 5 years, building networks and meeting people and talking to people. And as you know yourself, I started Independent Ireland, and which I've subsequently left. But this part of the whole networking meant that I was reaching people in other countries. So that event was actually in Poland. It was the inauguration of the Polish president, Karol Nawrocki. I was invited over to a conference and to the inauguration itself, which was excellent. There was 21 countries represented at it. So it was international. It wasn't just European. And to be honest with you, I don't necessarily see myself as a public speaker or anything, but when the opportunity arose to speak about democracy, I just felt, you know what, I'm pushing myself completely out of my comfort zone here. I'm going to speak on an international platform and tell people exactly what's going on in Ireland. I'm not like you having
I thought you did excellently, by the way. I thought the speech was wonderful, particularly the fact that you talk about, there's no future for young people here in Ireland currently at the moment with the housing crisis and the cost of living. And I thought that was probably the most important thing to tell Europe, that the reason, look, we've always had people leave our shores and go all over the world and explore the world, but there was always an opportunity to come back. But now there's no opportunity for our young people to come back because they can't afford it. Your daughter, I know, has gone over to London, I think. And you were saying your other daughter might be going away as well. And it's sad that it's now cheaper to live in London than live, in Dublin or Cork or Limerick. Actually, I seen a house in Cork there yesterday, a 4-bedroom house in Cork. And it looked now a nice house detached in a housing estate. And it was 1.1 million euro for a 4-bed house in Cork.
Who can afford that, Niall?
Nobody. Somebody can, obviously. Yeah, I couldn't.
I know. It's just, and it's not only that, when you put your children through college, it's a costly experience, as you know yourself. They come out the other end and there's no work in their profession. And I know everybody has to start somewhere, but both my daughters have been working for the last 5 years in a family business. So it's not like they won't work. They're good workers. They're willing to roll their sleeves up and get stuck in. But to not even get a response for a traineeship in this country, to not even get an acknowledgement of an email or of a letter that's sent in for work, for the first place to get an interview is in England. And then to be able to find accommodation and move and live independently, it's phenomenal to think that it has to be
our role. You did a great job from what I can see. So I'm assuming then you're going to throw your hat in the ring for presidency of Ireland, are you?
No, Niall, I am not going to throw my
President Mullally has a kind of ring to it, hasn't it? You know what I mean?
It does. I'm not going to lie. I like the sound of it. But I think the last year, and I mean, you've run through the whole system as well. It's very, very difficult to break through, the main parties.
Well, particularly with the presidency currently at the moment, where you've got political parties blocking anybody else from coming in, apart from those of the political parties. Any independents will find it difficult.
Exactly, and an independent is much more difficult, to get in behind because they don't necessarily have the support of a party, like support and financial backing. What will Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, what money will they throw at this? I can imagine what the top notch, they're going to go to the full hilt on it.
Oh, it'll be half a million each. The minimum you need to run for president is 250,000. Elaine, actually, hold on for a second. I've got to take a quick break and I'm going to come back to you about the drink driving straight after this break.
Let's Dance, the only weekly over 35s, 80s, 90s and noughties party, returns every Saturday to Dublin's top club Soho at 21 Delir Street. Doors open at 5:30 and in 2025, it's bigger and better than ever. Legendary DJs and MCs, dancers, performers, an electric atmosphere and the best crowd in Dublin. Tickets and group packages for Let's Dance are available now. Search Soho Dublin on eventbrite.ie and we'll see you on the dance floor.
All right, I'm talking to Elaine Mullally, former election candidate, by the way, sadly unsuccessful, but did really well in the last elections. But I want to, Elaine, if I can, go to this drink driving topic. So I'm going to read this. I'm going to make loads of mistakes because the word micrograms and milligrams is all over it. In the UK, drink driving laws are strict with varying limits depending on the country. England, Wales, Northern Ireland, the blood legal limit is 80 milligrams of alcohol per 100 millilitres of blood or 35 micrograms per 100 metres of breath. Scotland has a lower limit of 50 milligrams of alcohol per 100 millilitres of blood or 22 micrograms per 100 millilitres of breath. So, the bottom line is, now in the UK, they're bringing in a raft of new legislation to reduce it down to 20 millilitres, which means essentially you cannot drink anything. Here in Ireland, you can drink roughly a pint of beer. Over the course of 2 hours, you'd probably get away with 2 pints of beer. And they're also increasing, by the way, the legislature, or I should say the fines and the jail time, if you know, obviously if you get caught. And they want insurance, for example, to be a criminal offence, not a road traffic offence. So I'm asking the question, I mean, realistically, you don't get into a car with drink on you by accident. You don't bring the car to the pub by accident. You don't. This is not like, you know, you might be a little bit over the speed limit or a slightly careless driving because you take your eye off the road for a second and you have an accident. That's an accident. This is something you decide to do. You make a conscious decision to drink beer or drink whiskey or wine or whatever it is and jump into a car and decide to drive it home again. So should we have a zero tolerance completely? Forget about the millilitres and everything else. And just if you're caught with drink on in your system, that you should go either to jail or get a 10-year ban, not a 2-year ban. Or am I a little bit over the top on that? Elaine, what do you reckon? Are we taking it seriously enough?
I'd like to think we are taking it seriously enough because in the last couple of years, there has been quite a few road checks, Garda checks and stuff. So I hope we are, but I would agree in relation to zero tolerance once it's not. A woman told me recently that she got stopped and breathalyzed and she had used mouthwash. I don't know if that story is true or not, but it was told to me and she's a teacher.
There is a small alcohol level within mouthwash which will come up in a breath, could come up in a breath test. Now, it'll be very low. It's not going to... Yeah.
Yeah, in a blood test. Look, you know, in my town of Port Arrington here, we saw the absolute devastation that drink driving causes. A few years back, there's the Tracy family, young Kieran Tracy. There's actually a drink driving advert every Christmas out with that family in it.
That's right. I've interviewed the family. That was a shocking story. Yeah.
Yeah. So we know exactly. We've seen firsthand how that can absolutely devastate a family and a community. It's a bigger picture. It's not just. It's not just the family. The whole community was sent into shock at the time. So I do believe that we have to have zero tolerance. I would have to say it's very rare that I would meet or see somebody that thinks it's okay. So
the laws we have at the moment is kind of like, depending on how much alcohol you have, you can get a 6-month ban or possibly a 2-year ban, but that's the most you're going to get. I mean, is that really going to teach somebody a lesson? I know somebody who was caught twice and got two 2-year bans. But then after in the second one, they appealed it halfway through and got the license back. So the whole system seems a bit of a joke, to be honest with you. What about a 10-year ban? Would that teach people a lesson?
Yeah. I think a 10-year ban, I think it would be, it would send a much stronger message out there that you can get a 10-year ban. And as you say, a jail sentence, I don't know, like longer terms and off the road for longer periods of time, definitely.
Nobody goes to jail unless, of course, somebody dies in an accident and somebody has drink on them. And even then, it's quite rare that somebody goes to jail, but nobody generally goes to jail. That's the problem.
No. We need that. We need that fear of being sent to jail for it. I know we've come a long way because I do know years ago people got into the car solid and would drive home. And, you know, it's taken a long time to come back, to come down to this level. But I do think we need that one last push to just completely stop anybody thinking it's okay to have a drink and get into the car and drive, because
it's not.
Just not acceptable. It's not.
Okay, well, listen, I got to thank you very much indeed, Elaine Mullally. Well done, by the way, over in Poland and in Europe, representing the Irish people. You were there with your lovely gold harp and your shamrock representing Ireland. You look very well, and you spoke very well and very highly of Ireland. And we look forward to the presidential election. Elaine, there's a bit of a push. I've ever had one.
Thanks, brilliant.
All right, thank you very much indeed, Elaine Mullally. Let me go to Jackie if I can. Jackie, hi, how are you?
Firstly, a great lady, Elaine. I think she's amazing what she's doing. I follow her on social media and I've met her a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And I have to give her a big shout out. She's great. And common sense. You know, it comes back to a lot of everything that she says.
Pointing out the obvious.
It's the obvious. Exactly.
Okay, but getting back to drink driving, Jackie, do we take it seriously? Now, don't get me wrong, our rules are quite strict, but people are still not adhering to them. Every year, the Garda do Operation Lifesaver and catch loads of people drink driving. You would drive by a pub at any stage or with a car park, and there's loads of cars. Those cars are not driving home on their own, and all of those people, they're not drinking Coca-Cola. So people are not really taking it seriously, are they?
Well, look, you know, you can keep bringing in these laws and putting a law upon a law upon a law. It's all about whether its stuff is being enforced. And I drive all around the country. And if I say I'm stopped maybe twice in a year and breathalyzed, I'd say, and I'm maybe being generous on that. So
I haven't been stopped and breathalyzed in about 10 years. I would say.
There you go.
I don't drink. I wasn't worried about it at the time because I don't drink.
Yeah, and I don't drink either. But the thing that what I don't understand is that, you know, we're constantly kind of bringing out these laws, but yet there's no one enforcing them, or there isn't enough.
But there's very powerful lobby groups there. For example, many, many years ago, there was I remember the guards. Oh, this is going back about 15 years ago. The guards got into trouble because they set up a checkpoint outside a pub. Or 100 yards away from the car park of a pub. Yeah. And the pub, you know, the Vintners Association, go, oh, you can't be doing that. Now, that's really unfair targeting a pub like that. No, you can't be. So the Vintners and, you know, and those people, or those lobby groups and interested groups in alcohol, they're quite powerful.
They are, but you see, there's another side to this as well, Niall. You know, and if you go out the country and, you know, into villages and, you know, small rural areas, and there might be a pub there, and you have some of the elderly, you know, elder people that go and they socialize in that pub, and that's been taken away from them because there is no.
But you can't have one rule. I know. I understand the Healy Rays brought this up as well. Yeah, that the people down the country who live, you know, miles away from one pub, they have to get there somehow. But that's not our problem. You know what I mean? That's the law.
I know, but the other side of it is there isn't enough of an infrastructure. You know, like. There isn't enough taxis. There isn't enough public transport. You know, there's a lot of other issues feeding into this as well. But I don't agree. I actually think there should be zero tolerance when it comes to drink driving. I definitely.
Okay, so would you agree? My suggestion was, you know, if we're to go in tandem with Britain, who are now going to increase the legislation or reduce the amount of alcohol you can have practically down to zero, and also increase the fines and increase the bans, I was thinking maybe 10-year ban rather than two. And forget about this other ban, by the way, that if it's only a certain amount, you get a 6-month ban. Forget about that.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah, and And I know there's different circumstances and people can
well, what
get caught.
There's no circumstance. There's no circumstance where you drink and you drive.
I'm a non-drinker, so I'm only listening to.
I mean, even saying to somebody, "Oh, you can have one pint," that kind of tempts faith. You know what I mean? Because realistically, what you're saying to them there is, go in, drink one pint. He's sitting at the bar, and he'll go, "Oh, I might as well have one more. Yeah. I'll be grand.
I have another one."
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a guy said to me, "I'm going to go for one." And I had always said, there's no such thing as one. I've never seen anyone just drink one pint and out the gap. You know what I mean?
Well, hang on. Say there. Well, hang on for a second, Jackie. Morris, hi. How are you?
Niall, how are you doing? Yeah, I think 10 years would be a little bit too harsh. I think people would learn a lesson off you if you give them a five-year ban. Mm. I think 10 has shown them there's no light at the end of the tunnel. But I mean to say, and like you said, depending on the severity of how, like if the fella is only a couple of mils over, he's still as drunk as a fella that's fucking 20, 30, 40, 50 miles over. Now, you know yourself, I drive for a living, and I got my license when I was in the army at 18. I'm 46 years now on the road with that license, a full Arctic license I have. The only thing I can't drive is a motorbike, and that's my livelihood, my living. But I was stupid when I was young, Niall. I made stupid mistakes. I drank and drove when I was younger because everybody was doing it. But now, as far as I'm concerned, it's a no. As you get older, you know, you tell yourself...
Oh, so my dad did it as well. So my dad drank 19 pints of Guinness and drive us home
exactly.
in the car. Yeah,
and the car to drive home itself. You know?
That was the joke, wasn't it? The joke was, my dad used to say, "Ash, the car knows its way home."
Exactly. Yeah. And like even the cops would pull your dad and his generation and go, "Listen, Mick, park it up there and come back and get it tomorrow, will you?"
Yeah, give us the keys.
You know, so that day is gone. So what I'd say to you now is what I've noticed, the amount of cops that are on the road pulling young fellas, and they're getting them for cocaine, cannabis, everything, because they have this eye test now.
That's right.
And the pupils are dilated. So, you know, it's gone bad. Oh, I'm not drinking and driving, but I'm smoking dope. You know, I remember seeing a sticker years ago on a car, Niall, as a young man, and I said, "Don't drink and drive, smoke dope and fly." That's how flippant it was treated, you know. But as you get older, but I think basically, look, I was told at 18 by an officer in the army, there's the keys to that Land Rover. And if you don't behave properly in that, I might as well give you a loaded gun because you're going to kill somebody if you don't behave in it properly. And I never forgot that lesson. And drink and driving is like giving somebody a loaded gun. They don't go together. We know the ad that comes out at Christmas of the family you had on. Their life and child was destroyed. And somebody went to prison for 4 years. Big fucking whoopee-doo.
Yeah.
There you go. You know,
you kind of wonder, is that all a life is worth? I've had Leo Leogi on a few times too. His daughter was obviously killed as well by a drink driver in a hit.
Horrendous.
And
I remember the woman talking, Niall, and she was saying, "When the nurse handed him, I didn't even realise he was dead."
Oh.
What a horrific thing for a mother to go through on that. God. Horrific.
But yeah. Look, that's a whole different ball game. When you're responsible for someone's death and you've drank and drive, I'd throw away the key. I really would. But just in relation to getting caught. See, Morris, drink driving is not something that happens by accident. You know, you take your car with you with the intention of drinking. There's no other reason. Exactly. It's not like, let's say you're doing 5 miles an hour over the limit and you take your eye off the road for a second because something falls on the floor. You know, okay, that's stupidity. Mm. It's a lack of concentration. They're accidents. They happen. They shouldn't, but they do. But drink is intentional. It's intentional.
Exactly. And people don't realise that the more they're drinking, the more inebriated they become, and they can't make fucking proper decisions because their judgment is gone because of the alcohol in their brain.
Wow. Yeah.
You know? And that lunatic that wiped out that family had 8 points. 8 fucking points.
Well, he certainly didn't.
Family to life.
Yeah, he certainly didn't see the advertising for drink driving. Listen, Morris, thank you very much indeed. Appreciate you coming on to me. Thank you. Let me go to Paula as well. Paula, hi. How are you?
How are you, Niall? How's it going?
Good. Now, Paula, you, and my condolences, I don't know how long ago it was, but you lost your brother to drink driving.
I did, and back in 1997, he was a backseat passenger of a car, and he was killed along with his friend.
Oh,
so
gosh.
It was two lives that were lost, and there was a lot of drink taken, but ultimately speed was the killer. You know, if he hadn't been doing the speed he was doing, he couldn't take a corner and slammed into the steel gates of the school, killing both of them. And actually badly injuring the third lad, but thankfully the third lad happened to have a seatbelt on because back in the 1990s, very few people wore seatbelts.
That's right, yeah.
You know, but I would agree with the last caller, definitely. You know, basically the judicial system let my family down because he wasn't breathalyzed at the scene. He went to, you know, into court and just, you know, got a slap on the wrist and careless driving and off he went, you know, to live his life. And I remember sitting there thinking, like, how do you learn from that? You don't learn from that.
No.
Absolutely don't. And like my parents and family have had to live with that for nearly 30 years now. And he's out there living his life. And he didn't, you know, show any remorse or anything. And I think, you know, by right...
You'd imagine they'd even have it on their conscience. That would be enough for them. But they don't. Some of these people don't even have remorse, as you say, or have it on their conscience. They go off and live their lives. Meanwhile, you're dealing with the nightmare. Yeah.
You're living with the nightmare, and it never leaves you. Not a day goes by when we don't think about them. And, you know, when it comes to zero tolerance for alcohol, I'd always say you shouldn't get into a car and drink and drive. There's no excuse for it. But ultimately, speed is the big killer.
Yeah, if you're drunk, you've no idea what speed you're driving at. You know what I mean? You haven't a clue because you're not even taking any attention to it if you're drunk. So, the same goes with just the careless driving aspect of it as well. You lose all form of concentration and judgment because you're drunk.
Absolutely.
So they all go hand in hand.
And I agree with the last caller. Like if you have one pint, you're going to want to have two. But then I would look at as well, and you're probably surprised to hear me say this, if there's a man and he decides, well, I'm going to drive tonight, so I'll go out and have two pints of shandy, is he going to be over the limit? Because he's not going to endanger anyone if he's just having two pints of shandy or he's having a half and half or something like that. So I don't know.
At the moment, the problem we have...
It's completely zero, you know.
But Paula, the problem we have at the moment is, right, the law states you can go out and have a pint of beer, or and it's a little bit less than a pint, but if you're mulling over the pint for an hour, you'll be fine, right? So the idea that you're letting people do that, or a small glass of wine, the idea that you're letting people do that gives them the opportunity to say, oh, well, I just had another one, you know, I just had one more. So why have that there in the first place? What they're doing in the UK is reducing it to a level where you can't even do that. In other words, complete discouragement. You can't do it at all. You're just not allowed to drink and drive. So, I mean, and it's an intentional thing to do. You know, you're going to a pub with the car. So, you know, you're doing it intentionally. So, I mean, should we not just call a spade here and say, listen, you're not going to lose your license for 2 years. You're going to lose it for 10 years.
Well, I would say lose it for 5 years. You know, I mean, 10 years, if it's a first offence and someone gets caught drink driving and they have a pint on them or two pints on them, you know, and then they drove home and got caught. I mean, it's very harsh to go and say you can't drive now for 10 years. I mean, the majority of people would say a pint or two on them are not going to, unless they were speeding, they're not going to kill anyone on the road. I don't think so anyway. I mean, I know, you know, as a child of the 70s, I know the amount of people I know who drove and might have just had two pints and went home, you know, and there was
I just mentioned, you know, there a few minutes ago, I'd be in the back of the car and my dad would be driving the car plastered. I remember it well.
You know, but nobody was kind of, people, they were more aware that they'd drink taken, so they just wouldn't drive as fast. I mean, the biggest worry at the moment is the amount of people are driving under the influence of drugs as well. You know, so I don't think a pint really, and honestly, and I've lost a brother to somebody who was drink driving who had several pints. It wasn't just one pint, it had several pints. And if you go out and you say, right, I've had my pint now, or I've had my two pints of shandy, oh, feck it, I'm going to go mad. And then you go out and you kill somebody. Well, you deserve to be just thrown in jail. You deserve to have your license revoked for 10 years because you made a conscious decision to go out and drink all that drink.
Well, I personally believe, by the way, if you're responsible for somebody's death and you're drunk, you should never get your license
back
again.
Yeah. You should never get your license back again. But you should, you know, I mean, there should be, you know, some sort of retribution for it. You shouldn't just be able to just walk away from it and say,
No, you should go to jail. If somebody loses their life because of your incompetence and you went out and drink and drive, well, you should go to jail. There's no two ways about it.
Absolutely. You don't. You know, you lose your license for 2 years, a slap on the wrist. It's not enough. You don't learn from that. You actually need, it just needs to be a bit harsher. But I mean, I honestly don't think a pint is that big of a deal. If you make that conscious decision to go out and have more than that, well, then it's on you. You know, if something happens, it's on you. And if you kill somebody in the meantime, well, then that's it. Lock them up, throw away the key, no license. And, you know, I wouldn't agree with them just being able to walk away and say, do it again, you know?
Oh, no, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you. And again, condolences. I'm sure you do think about your brother every single day. Paula, thank you very much indeed. Let me go to Joe. Joe, hi, how are you?
Not too bad, Niall. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. Joe, I mean, okay. I mean, it is a bit extreme, I suppose, to ban somebody for 10 years just for being caught with one or two pints on them. But should we take a zero tolerance to drink driving? Because people are just not listening.
Well, I think, Niall, in this day and age, we should be doing a zero tolerance on drink driving, because you see the carnage that's gone on all over the country in the last, say, 15, 20 years, and especially probably in the last 5 years, the amount of people that have died who shouldn't have died because of reckless drink driving, and not just drink driving, but drug driving as well. Because the amount of people that's taken that's snorting cocaine behind the wheel and everything like that is absolutely disgusting. And I think there should be a zero tolerance to drink driving at all costs, because the last thing we want to see, like, I've seen it myself over the years, I've seen people going around driving who shouldn't be even allowed. In fact, they shouldn't be even allowed to own a dog or a cat, never mind get behind the wheel of a car. They're just complete, utter scumbags. That's what they are. They have no respect for anyone. They have no respect. I don't even think they have respect for themselves. So you can imagine what they're doing to families and what they're doing, like, to ordinary people in general. Anyone, doesn't matter who they are. They just leave a trail of carnage left, right and centre all over the place. And there should be no way that they should, there's no way they should be allowed to get away with it at any cost. There should be a total crackdown completely on it, because this is going on, this has been going on now for a long time in this country. And
But part of the problem, and I have to agree with what Jackie said earlier on, part of the problem is enforcement. So you can bring in all the laws you want and say, yeah, we're going to crack down on drink driving, any drink at all. Forget about the one pint. If you're caught with any alcohol in your blood at all, you know, we're going to give you a 10-year ban or whatever it is, or fine of €5,000 or whatever you want to increase it to. But there's no point in having those laws. There's nobody actually enforcing it. So when the guards turn around at Christmas and say, oh, Operation Lifesaver was great this year, you know, we had, you know, I don't know, 140 convictions for drink driving. That's 140 people they caught. What about all the ones they didn't catch?
Yeah, well, you see, yeah, that's the thing about it. And, of course, we had an incompetent Minister for Justice in the last couple of years. I'm not talking about the current fella, but I'm talking about the last person.
Hilla McEntee,
was an absolute liability. A woman that gone around that said that Dublin was safe and that Ireland was safe. Like, with respect, Niall, I could imagine the amount of carnage that's been going on. We don't even probably know half the amount of stuff that's happening in relation to drink driving. There's probably a load of other cases going on that we don't know about. You could imagine if all that was to come out in the radar, it would be an absolute massacre, it would. Left, right, and centre.
I know. And it's not just, by the way, illegal drugs. It's also prescription drugs. People driving using prescription drugs is a huge problem too. But that's another day's topic, I suppose, in some sense. Joe, stay there with me because I'm stuck for time here and I've got to go to Maureen. Maureen, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. How are you?
Good. Maureen, drink driving, are we taking it seriously enough?
Look, we're not taking any driving seriously enough today, Niall. Because I don't live in a very big town. I'll tell you something. I'm out there and during the day. I have never seen such incompetent drivers in all my life. Driving has gone to shit in this country. I'm trying to cross a pedestrian crossing in my town and they're coming down. They have the eventually they put the lines, the squiggly lines that tell you you start to slow down now because you're coming to a crossing because you don't know if the person that put that wants to cross, and they're driving straight through. Twice, I was nearly hit by a car on one of these crossings. They're parking on double yellow lines. There's a warden walking around the street. She's not even slapping tickets on cars. There's a lot more going on to this. I have no problem. I never had a problem. Because I served people that just come in to me when I was working. And many of the lads would come in. Even back in those days. And they say, I'm only staying for one. I'll have a pint. I have the car. Nobody's going to crash a car on one pint of beer. Now, I don't. People will not agree with it. Or on one glass of wine. That this is the problem. So if you're going to go down this road, you're going to have people off the road because they have to take medication for their health. They have to take some kind of medication. And if that shows up, what are they supposed to do then?
I understand. But when you're taking certain types of medication, be it Valium or whatever it is, you have a personal responsibility then not to drive a car. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, but Niall, you see, if the same thing goes to medication.
No, I understand that. But unfortunately,
that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to crash their car. The most of the traffic accidents today, when you look at it, is incompetent driving.
Oh, no, I'm aware of that.
It's as simple as that. How many lately? Well, and all the crashes we have in this country.
Well, if you take your eyes off the road. Hold on a second, Maureen. If you take your eyes off the road or you have a lack of concentration or something falls on the floor and you reach down to pick it up.
Of course you do.
Yeah, but they're accidents. But hold on, let's be fair. They're accidents. You didn't set out that morning to do that, okay? That's an accident. We will never, ever stop accidents. There's 2.2 million vehicles on the road that weigh about a ton. They're eventually going to run into each other at some point. So that until we get to a point where all vehicles are automated. Maybe that.
No,
be
you didn't.
Years,
no, so, I agree with that.
Okay, but drink driving either. Is intentional. It's an intentional act.
Yes, the people that go out and drink more than what they should. I have no problem with a man coming from work having a pint of beer, and I'm going to be honest about it.
Why?
Because never. Why
allow him
one pint?
But it just. But that's not the point. But I always get mixed up with pint and pint.
But
no, it is. If you're allowing somebody to have one pint, what you're saying is it's okay to have a pint of beer. So that's
a,
and roughly it is
a
okay,
beer.
But what? But why?
Going to make you crash your car?
But it doesn't matter if the message is there that you can have a pint of beer. Why not have a strong message that you can't have any alcohol and drive a car? That's just the message. None of this dilly dallying around one pint or 1.1 or you know or just a little bit less than a pint and maybe a small glass of wine. But why mess around with all of that? Don't be leaving it to chance. Just say none. That's it. Done. Over. Finished. You can't drink and drive.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That'll be the argument. I'm not agreeing with that. Because you're going to do that, you'd have to look at everything else. And this actually, when I'm hearing all this, we know, and you know, Niall, and everybody else knows, that driving today is absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, they bring out all these laws and ban you for 10 years and all the rest of it. They are actually covering up because they're too incompetent themselves. To tackle, I told you, I live in a smaller town and I'm seeing it every day. I actually had to bring that warden here in my town up to my granddaughter's play school because cars are parking on the footpath. A woman coming down with a buggy has to go out on the road, the same in the estate where I live. And he said, I've got
to
tell one day.
I know, and I get that, Maury. There's a million other issues when it comes to driving and you are 100% right. I've got 2 minutes and I just want to bring John in. John, hi, sorry, I do apologise. So shoot there, you've got about 2 minutes. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah, right. Look, lifetime ban, I mean, for drink driving, for drug driving, for speeding, for texting using your mobile phone, lifetime ban. You're just off the road, end of story, it's over. Say goodbye to your car, give it back to the finance company, sell it if you want the thing from the top to bottom, but lifetime ban. Nothing else will work. There's too many cars on the road now. There's not enough police out there anywhere. That's for the checkpoints, number one. But the thing is, if you are caught, it will definitely be some form of a deterrent if there was a lifetime ban. Because I don't agree with this 5 or 10 years, right? I don't agree with the two-tier system that can fool Zona Kerry where you would have a rural and an urban.
But John, by your own admission, many, many, many years ago, you were caught, or you were drink driving.
I'm just saying.
You got another shot. You know, you're driving now. Oh, well, I don't know whether you're driving now or not. But you're driving, or you were driving again. So you got. I don't want to be too harsh here. You know,
I'll answer it because I knew you were going to go there with it. So I preempted your question.
Yeah,
right?
I know, because you told me before.
And my answer is that it's not, I was wrong to be drinking and driving, but it's not my fault and deny that the guard left me go. That was on him. I should have been prosecuted. That was not my fault that I wasn't standing in front of the church.
But go by your rules, if you had been prosecuted, now I know it was a long time ago and it was a different world we lived in then, you know, you would have lost your license for life. So here we be today, and you still have no license.
I'm talking about now because there's way more cars on the road and everything, and the cars are faster and everything. There's a lot more people have access to cars than had in the 70s, right? So, look, get it out there now. If you're caught now, you're using your mobile phone, texting way over the speed limit, drinking, driving, your license is gone. It's over.
Okay, listen, John, thank you very much indeed. I appreciate you coming on.